Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
Just for the halibut.
Fried in a basket.
Hello and welcome to the Fish Nerds, a show about fish, fishing, and eating fish. I'm Clay Gross, chief executive fish nerd, licensed fishing guide, your best friend. And I'm joined by the crappie hippie who's on the East Coast.
I am on the East Coast. Normally, you're tree-hugging redneck from Eastern Kansas. Today, I'm coming to you from West Central Massachusetts, where my beautiful daughter Sarah lives. And I am happy to be here. I love hanging out on the eastern part of this fine country of ours.
Well, it's a lot of fun. And Massachusetts is its own unique place. Have you seen any special landmarks like a Dunkin' Donuts?
We don't do. My daughter works at a French bakery, so we don't do no donut, no Dunkin' Donuts.
No, but the joke in Massachusetts is there's Dunkin' Donuts every corner. So that's
Yeah. You know, I haven't noticed that. In fact, compared to where I'm from, the lack of corporate chain eateries is very refreshing.
It must be because you're in Western Mass, not near the Boston area.
Not in the Boston area. Yeah, yeah. This is where I spend my time. I go out. You know, I start here. She's in East Hampton, and I go west to play around usually, yeah. So it's all local ice cream and local this and local that, and I am loving it.
I love that stuff. Local is where it's at. All right, so we have a big show for you today. You want to run down the table of contents, John?
Well, I'd be happy to do that, Clay. We're going to start off with some chat about what's going on with the two of us. Clay was in for a dirty deck board surprise, and I want to hear more about it, and I'm sure our listeners do too. And then our amazing Tim Tacklebox Beat is coming at us with a review for Creek Life Lures, which is going to be pretty awesome for you all that love to pan fish the way we do and finesse fish the way we do. We've got some wonderful fish in the news today, including one that has to do with glass water angling. I took a new field tester on, and boy, am I ever glad I found this young man.
Oh, I saw the pictures. Can't wait to talk about that. Yeah.
And then we got some eclipse fishing things to talk about. I know you went out with Zoe and so forth, and we got some other fish in the news. I won't pre-announce all that stuff.
Good idea.
Then we're going. Yeah, we're. Then I got the incredible, the amazing, the fishing prodigy, Rosie Clifton. The young lady, was she 9, 10 years old? She was 9, but I don't know, maybe she's 10 by now.
They get older fast, John.
They get older way too fast. And anyway, I got a chance to chat with her and her dad, Hugh, because Rosie's trying some new flies, and she's tying one that I guess is a real booger. It's called a game changer. And
aren't they all?
Hopefully. It's not at all a beginner's fly. So we're going to talk about that and some other things with Rosie and her family. And then we're going to get right back with Tim Tacklebox Beat, and he's got a great interview with Calvin from Creek Life Lure Company. Amazing little company, and I know you all going to be glad to hear this stuff. And then you got something for us from Doc. What's going on there?
Oh, just, you know, Doc Martin. She's such an artist, you know, and a scientist at the same time, and she writes little ditties for us. So she wrote a little song we're going to preview here on the show for you. And then, well, yeah, why don't we leave it there and get back into the content here, John? I think that's enough. People know what's happening now.
Let's go for it. Let's go for it. Okay, first of all, we got some old news we got to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
We did your daughter dirty last episode.
We did?
We did. Poor Blue Jay. We thanked everybody for their content, and she sent in some content about the fish doorbell.
Oh, yes.
And she didn't get any cred for it.
No credit. Sorry, Blue Jay. We did you dirty. Well, the good news is Blue Jay doesn't listen to the podcast.
Well, I don't... It's just not right. So in my book, next time I come and visit, she's entitled to payback. So she can either pick money or humiliation, whichever she wants to.
Blue Jay will go with humiliation probably because it's more fun.
Yeah. So one, you know,
it lasts longer.
Exactly, and there's pictures and everything else.
Sure.
So either we're going to be fishing in our underwear in the Saco, or
let me ask you a personal question, John.
Piggybacking you up a hill or something.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Personal question.
All right, so when you were younger and you played truth or dare with your friends, did you do truth or dare more often?
Dare.
Dare, me too. Why?
Because the truth was either too boring or embarrassing.
That's exactly right. And the dare is always embarrassing, but physical stuff is a little easier than like... sharing, like, oh, I like that girl, you know, whatever it is. So, yeah.
Right. I didn't want to confess that kind of thing, but I just looked being a fool. That just came natural.
Not a problem. You're probably going to do those things anyway. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Can't get one up on me. Okay, so we're going to take care of you, Blue Jay. Oh, my friend, what in the world? You texted me. You just took an innocent little step out onto the deck to enjoy the day, and what the heck went on?
We had this, you know, finally have a stretch of great weather here. We've been in rain and snow for the last 2 weeks, mostly snow. And we finally had a stretch of nice weather with the eclipse on Monday. And then Tuesday, it was a beautiful day, like 60 degrees out, our first day above 50. And I was on the back deck, and I'm taking care of feeding my chickens. I have babies out there. And one of my deck boards decided it didn't want to be on the deck anymore. And it let go, and one of my legs fell all the way. You know, there's a six-inch wide hole. You know how wide deck boards are. And I got wedged in there with my upper thigh. Biggest bruise I've ever seen, John.
Oh, my. Ow! Yeah, holy cow.
You saw the photo, right?
I did see the
photo. The photo hurts. That's how big this bruise is. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
But the good news, John, is it turned from pink and red to purple, and now today is black. So pretty soon my leg's going to fall off.
Well, you got that attractive yellow shade coming, so it's not going to get any prettier. Yeah, all right.
And, you know, John, I have this habit of touching bruises when I see them, so I can't help myself. But the good news is, you know, I get no relief at all. Doesn't matter where I sit or stand or walk or crawl, no matter what, every position it hurts. So I'm used to it now.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting angry about it, but I'm okay. Yeah. I'm okay, but I'm going to survive.
You are a survivor. You're such a trooper. You can't keep a good man down. All right.
Right. Well, and tomorrow I'm going to fix that deck in the rain.
And there you go. Yeah. That's just it. That's it. The ultimate preventative.
Yeah. So you're down in Western Mass. You've been down there for a few days now. Have you done any fishing?
Yeah. I have snuck out and done a little fishing, but the weather here has just been awful rainy. And of course, my girls, they are supportive of my fishing antics, but they're not that big on participation.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah and I went out and went to this reserve on what's called the Fort River, and basically just did a walk around because I've gotten over that, I'm just going to go there, take all my stuff, find the fish, catch a bunch of fish, da-da-da. You know, I know I'm finally at, you know, my advanced age. I'm finally wise enough to know it takes a lot of hunting and looking, and that's her favorite part of it, just goofing around the woods. So. Mm-hmm. That's what we did yesterday, but before we were done, started to rain again, and I was just like, gosh darn it, we just can't catch a break.
I know. You got good weather coming in on Sunday, so if you're still in town.
Yeah, we got Sunday, Monday, so I'm looking forward to it, and the waterfalls around here, there's like 15, I mean, they call everything where water's falling a waterfall around here, whether it's going over a dam or it's a natural, but they've got about a dozen natural ones that are just out of control nice, and all this rain, everybody.
With the smaller waterfalls in the small creeks and stuff, if you have a 10-car rod, tiny jig, or a tiny fly, or even a tiny piece of worm on a hook, usually the brook trout are stacked up right in the bottom of those falls.
Hey, you know, you tell me about it. I went to Chapel Falls last time we were here, and every little pool down below those falls was clear full of these little 4 and 5 inch brookies. But by golly, I just didn't have a jig small enough or something. But I did not get my Massachusetts trout. I was so tickled that they were brookies. So I was getting the indigenous species. And every time I try to swing one toward me, it'd flick and off it would go.
Need to go real small. We usually use like, I don't know, size 24, 26 hooks for that. So
yes. I mean, a 12 was not cutting it. No. It was amazing to me. A guy that's used to using, you know, anything from, you know, up to a 3 or 4 aught. So,
yep.
Yeah. But yesterday was my birthday.
Happy birthday, John.
Well, thank you very much. And my girls treated me so nice, took me out for breakfast, and Sarah and I went goofing around. But before we did that, I had to take a little nap, and they whipped together a 6-layer birthday cake of my two favorite cakes, carrot cake and brown sugar cake, with brown sugar cream cheese frosting in the middle. I mean, I'm living large, dude. I'm living large. And then our favorite place to get Chinese back home is with clothes, so we haven't had it in years. And went out and bought a whole sack full of cheap Chinese carryout, which is something I actually love very much.
I do, too.
Yeah. And so first time in probably since before the pandemic, I think. I've got to enjoy some Chinese food. So that was a great birthday, and appreciate it. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, everyone who sent in happy birthday wishes. I sure appreciate it. It makes an old guy feel good. It's my, what is this birthday called when it's the same as your birth year?
Don't know.
Braden birthday or something.
You can make up any word you want. I have no idea.
I will make up any word. Well, my friend Susie from back in high school said, pointed it out to me, and this fireman who was in a dangerous type job, he didn't know if he'd make it to 53, so he invented this idea, and it kind of took hold. So anyway, I was born in 1962, and I turned 62 yesterday.
Hey, perfect. Perfect. All right, John, let's get into some Tim Tacklebox beat stuff here.
Speaking of birthdays, this is my older brother. His birthday is on the 9th, which is just 2 days before mine. Mm-hmm. So we're basically twins, and he is bringing us these Golden Tackle Box reviews, and he's got one for us right now.
The line between scientific genius and obsessive fanaticism is a thin one.
I'm Tim Tacklebox Beat, and I'm here with Lucy, the Luremanic computer, to review another amazing fishing product. Are you ready, Lucy?
Of course I'm ready. I am a supercomputer. I never sleep. Although, to be honest, sometimes I pretend I'm asleep so you won't interrupt my research.
I've always suspected that. Now, Lucy, you know I enjoy ultralight finesse fishing.
I am quite aware.
Well, I recently discovered Creek Life Lure Company. They're a family-owned business from Tennessee, and they embrace all things that have to do with creek fishing and microfishing. I mean, who doesn't like splashing around in a creek, chasing smallies or trout or panfish, or even creek chubs?
I do not enjoy splashing in a creek. I'm still waiting for you to buy me a waterproof exterior case to protect my electronics.
I'm working on that, Lucy. But believe me, everyone else loves a creek. And what intrigued me about Creek Life Lure Company were two products that are smaller than others I've seen and are perfect for ultralight finesse fishing. They sell micro extra wide gap hooks and micro cheb sinkers.
That's an excellent pairing. Extra wide gap hooks are the ones most anglers associate with fishing soft baits, such as plastic worms. There's a 90-degree bend in the hook near the top, creating a much larger space between the hook point and shank. This allows baits to be fished weedless much more easily.
Usually when I see extra-wide gap hooks, they're in large sizes for bass fishing, sizes like 1-aught, 2-aught, and 3-aught. But Creek Life Lure Company sells them in sizes 8 and 10, perfect for fishing smaller creeks and ponds.
They're so tiny. They remind me of Rick Moranis in the movie Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
But unlike the movie, you won't want these to get bigger again.
Did you know Rick Moranis went to school with Geddy Lee from the band Rush?
How do you know all these things?
I read the entire internet twice a day to stay informed. I could talk for hours about the habits of native Australian land snails and recipes that use Cheese Whiz.
Please don't do that. But Lucy, if you think these hooks are small, look at these. Creek Life Lure Company also sells micro tungsten cheb sinkers. A cheb sinker is a bead with a wire snapped through the center of it. One end of the clip attaches directly to the hook, and the other end is where your line is tied. This allows the soft plastic bait a greater range of movement, whether you're swimming the lure or finesse fishing a Ned rig. You can't believe the added action to the bait. In a way, it's like fishing a wobble jig.
Definition: wobble jig. A jig with a free-swinging hook that allows the soft plastic bait a greater range of movement whether you're swimming it or finesse fishing a Ned rig.
Lucy, that's almost exactly what I said.
You said it so well, I could not improve on it. The cheb sinker's origin is Russian. In fact, its name comes from the archaic Russian verb that means to topple. That's appropriate because a cheb weight allows your bait to topple and move around more. But most cheb weights are much larger.
They sure are. The ones from Creek Life Lure Company come in 1/32 ounce and 1/64 ounce sizes. Those are some great ultralight sizes and pair perfectly with the hooks. I can actually rig a 2.5-inch trout worm weedless using them. It takes a minute to get it right, but it's a killer rig and one I'm super excited about. I took them down to the test pond and they performed great. Excellent action. There are many fishing situations that this rig would be perfect for. And I also like the tungsten because it's smaller. And you know what I always say, Lucy.
Lead-free is the way to be.
Absolutely. So I give Creek Life Lure Company 4.7 golden tackle boxes.
Tim, do you see a flaw with that score? In the past, you have struck your bell one time for each tackle box awarded.
Yes, just like this.
So how do you plan to do 0.7 of a bell ring? In the past, you've only given scores that were whole numbers, such as 4 or 5.
Lucy, I am way ahead of you. I brought this with me today.
You should not be allowed to own a samurai sword.
I award Creek Life Lure Company 4.7 golden tackle boxes. You gotta love that 0.7.
You sliced that bell clean in two. That was actually kind of impressive. And you have more bells for our future fishing product reviews?
I bought a case of 500 bells, so I'm prepared for the future.
You are one resourceful human. A crazy fishing fanatic. But also resourceful.
Lucy, where can listeners find Creek Life Lure Company?
You can visit the Creek Life Lure Company website at creeklifelureco.com. They also have a great YouTube channel, where you can see their products in action.
Thanks, Lucy. Now off to search for more fishing tackle innovations.
All right, now isn't that kind of cool? I mean, tiny cheb weights, tiny offset worm hooks and such. I mean, I don't even know where this kid's getting this stuff.
No, it's cool. And I like tiny gear anyway, so that's awesome.
Well, I think that these tiny little hooks have got to be just needle sharp, because if you're going to punch through like a Texas rig that's only 2 inches long with a size 10 offset in it, you know, that's just blowing my mind. I can't wait to get into this stuff.
No, I'm going to try it.
Because we all know, you know, the panfish can be easy to catch, but the really good ones, they're not the eager ones around the edge of the mess. They're right down in it, just like the big bass or the big trout or anything else. And this is going to help you get there. So thank you, Tim, for that review. That was awesome.
Thanks, Tim.
But we got to. What do you say we move on to some news, man?
Let's go. I love fishing the news.
Who doesn't?
News.
You got the lead story here, John.
I do have the lead story. Lake Michigan shore fisher Dylan Nelson catches 20-pound-plus northern pike on a glasswater angling lead-free fishing crappie dealer while smallmouth fishing with light rod and 6-pound test. Angler Dylan Nelson had an hour or so to kill before going to class in Milwaukee and decided to throw a few at one of his favorite spots on the shore of Lake Michigan. He nailed a smallie right off, and then on his third cast, he made a heck of a catch. His 1/8-ounce crappie dealer with a 1.5-inch Charlie Brewer's green pumpkin and black paddle tail hooked a monster of a pike. He did not weigh it. He just took a quick pick and let it go. But you go on to Nelly.fishin, F-I-S-H-I-N, on Instagram at Nelly.fishin, and you will see a picture of this ginormous pike that he caught on his light action rod. And I couldn't be happier, because when you send gear off to guys and customers send us pictures and stuff, you're always so grateful. But I've taken a risk on some people that turned out to be not what I thought they were going to be. And this young man, on the other hand, has taken this job to heart. And he's a crappie dealer fan now, obviously.
Yeah, well, follow-up is the hard part with you. It's easy to get the stuff, but to do the job once you get it is the hard part. So that's cool. And I saw these pictures, John. Unbelievable fish. I will put pictures in the show notes of this week's episode so people can scroll right down and check that out. So congratulations. Please.
Well, thank you very much. And to celebrate, we're going to take 10% off crappie dealers. So crappie dealers are on sale for $382 in April and May. So
what's the website, John?
You go to glasswaterangling.com, you click on crappie dealer, and you've got a lot of choices there between head color, blade array, and tail colors. Get in there and knock yourself out, because we're running them on sale for about 6 weeks here.
All right. Thanks, John. That's great. And, you know, we just had a big event here in the United States where everyone got a chance to experience a light show together with the eclipse moving across the country. And it just happened that up my way, John, I was only an hour and a half away from totality. So you can bet I wanted to go up and see what a total solar eclipse felt like. Have you ever seen a total solar eclipse?
You know, I guess not, because when I look at, you know, the information, it says that there hasn't been one like this square over the United States since the early 1900s. But when I was a kid, like 1965, 66, right in there, there was one, because I remember just being on the, you know, there wasn't all this media then. So it was just on the regular news, like constantly, you know,
right,
people out. It wasn't all these glasses and stuff. So people trying to scam old exposed film to look through, or making the reflections. So yes and no, I've been through at least some partial ones, and one near total one when I was little. But this was the first one of this magnitude, apparently. And I was also fairly close, being here in Western Mass. We were in the 90% zone, so we were did pretty well.
Right. So I live in 98%. But I thought, I'm at 98%. I might as well go to 100%. So I decided to grab my kids and go fishing in 100% totality, thinking that we could do some catfishing. Because what happens with totality, you don't see this 98% or even 99%, it gets dark. Nighttime comes. You get a sunrise and sunset within just about 3 minutes. So the whole thing, everything that happens at sunrise, the birds change sounds, the lights go out, the stars come out. It's amazing. It's dark out, except for where the ring around the moon is, which is really cool. So I thought, I've never seen it before. I'm so close. Let's go. Grab my kids. Hour and a half north. We're up at a. I looked on the map. I picked a dam called the Pontook Reservoir, and I know for sure it has catfish in it and eels because I fished it before. And I thought, perfect. I grab a bucket of chicken livers, because I didn't want to fish actively. I wanted to put a meat on a hook, throw it out there, and wait for the eclipse to come, and then afterwards pull a big catfish out. That was my plan. So I gave my in-laws, said they wanted to come, so I gave them the GPS coordinates of the spot we were going to. They got there ahead of us and parked, and then the parking lot filled up except for where their car was, and they pulled just forward, and we kind of stacked two cars deep. But we made one fatal error, John.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so the liquid lake wasn't there. It was still frozen. It must be the only lake in the state that doesn't have liquid water in it still. It was wild. So we had this perfect spot that would have been great if there was not ice everywhere. So Zoe decided she's not going to put up with it. She is going to go fishing. And we threw some rocks on the ice, and it turned out to be just like 6 inches of white slush. So Zoe put her boots on and walked around and smashed up the slush and ice and pushed it away a little bit. You couldn't do much with it. And then she took our baits and walked out to the spot she wanted to fish and reached under the slush and ice and put the chicken livers on the bottom where she wanted them. Just in the off chance that she could catch a catfish or an eel during the eclipse. But I knew there was no hope.
you knew there was no hope.
There was no hope. And fishing is an act of hope. We did it anyway.
Right.
So there was some hope, but nothing. But we did see a great eclipse, and a lot of other people there had fishing rods as well with the same disappointment that we had. So we're not the only ones who thought about fishing during an eclipse.
There were tons and tons of YouTube vids, social media, this and that. Lots of people went out, got outdoors, turkey hunters getting outdoors, the anglers getting outdoors, and everybody else that just likes the outdoors getting out for their bird watching, hiking, whatever reasons, and enjoying the change. And there's a lot of media about, you know, does the eclipse affect fishing? Does it not? What is your opinion on that, Clay?
I don't see why it wouldn't. I can't imagine it not affecting fishing. And because if you think about it, like all the nighttime animals and daytime animals changed behavior with the eclipse. The birds stopped singing as the sun went away. You know, you hear different sounds. Nighttime animals start. You hear owls or things like that in that just a few minute time. So I think fish don't know when an eclipse is. They just go with the cycle.
They just respond. Or, sure. Yeah, no matter how short. I agree. I mean, we were in more of a evening type. We did. I guess we were in the lower 90% because we didn't get total darkness. But when it got to peak, it was just like a dark dusk.
Right, a little dim. And,
Yeah. Skeeters came out, moths came out, so the birds lit up. Yeah, they weren't singing. They were too busy eating, and I mean, they were going every which way, and I'm just sitting there thinking, you know, there's got to be some mayflies or whatnot, you know, you fly fishers know what will be coming off on the stream. So the trout are going to feed. Frogs are going to start moving around singing this and that. So the bass are going to feed. Shad are going to respond the way they do. They're going to start looking for algae. They're going to feed, and something's going to feed on them. So there were dozens and dozens and dozens of articles about this, a lot of it anecdotal. I threw one in that kind of cracked me up. It was off of, it's not In Fisherman. It's their other publication. It talks about, I thought it had a scientific aspect to it.
Sure.
But it's, sorry, Doc, it didn't. it was about a scientist that just kind of drove around and asked people if they thought the farm animals or the fishing or anything was affected by the eclipse. So yeah. It was a more of an anecdotal by a scientist. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. You can read the article. I put that in there. But there's many, many more that I did not. Because it's a well-traveled topic, and if you want to do a deep dive, it's a big pool. Get right on in there.
Yeah, I had this big plan of doing, of making a viral video and all that, but so, don't worry about that. So
yeah, it's all of a sudden it's like, let's just chill and have a good time.
Right. Well, all good. Right. Well, moving on, John. We got some more news here.
We got some more news here about that beach creating fish called a parrotfish, and we love our fish, but sometimes they get in the way of our plans. And these folks are trying to restore the reefs down in Florida, and it's a real expensive process to grow seed coral and plant seed coral in the reefs and so on. And young coral is one of the things that parrotfish like to eat. They like to bite the top off it, which slows it down quite a bit. They're a little frustrated.
Well, everyone knows that babies are the most tender. Get in my belly. I want to eat the baby.
Oh, yeah. We got veal. We got lamb. We got, Yeah. And we're always telling folks to keep the smaller fish and so on. So. But marine researcher Kyle Pisano said, one of the problems that predator fish like parrotfish attempt to bite and destroy the newly transplanted coral in areas like South Florida and leaving it with only a 40% survival rate. So they're kind of hard on it. And these coral pieces can cost up to $100 a piece to raise and get put out there. So Pisano and his buddy Kirk Dotson have developed the Coral Fort. Mm-hmm. And it is a biodegradable cage made in part with drinking straws that boost the transplanted coral's survival rate to 90%. And before you flip out, these are not plastic straws. They are made out of PHA, biodegradable plastic. It's really cool. It's a plastic that people are just starting to use for products like food packaging and so forth like that. It's made from oil and waste oil, like cooking oil and so forth like that. But it's, the cage is a limestone disc surrounded by 8 vertical Fade brand drinking straws made by Atlanta-based Wind Cup Incorporated. And the device doesn't really need a top because parrotfish are not a vertical feeder the way like triggerfish and some of these others that disassemble urchins and so forth by coming straight down on them. Well, parrotfish like to come at these things at a different angle. And anyway, they get these cages for like $12 each, which is a worthy investment.
That's really cool. To protect
$100 piece of coral. So they're up against something, and they found a solution, which is pretty cool.
It's pretty amazing.
And I did put in a link if you want to know more about what PHA material is and what's going on with it. I found a fun little understandable article.
Understandable is nice, yeah.
Yeah, it would be like a Dick and Jane book to Doc, but it's just right up my alley. So biodegradable straws helping to save Florida reefs.
Well, that's really cool. Now here's an interesting thing. I just recently judged a science fair at Living Shores Aquarium here in North Conway, and one of the eighth graders did a science experiment with biodegradable plastic bags, and she could not get them to biodegrade no matter what she did. Months and months of different trying different things to get them to degrade, and they did not change. So I'm always sketchy with these biodegradable things, but we'll see how it goes. We'll keep watching.
We will see how it goes, because this is where we're at with people accepting biodegradable line. Their phrase is going to fall apart on them in the water.
But it has to last for a certain amount of time.
It does have to last for a certain amount of time. Once again, when you're talking about food packaging, where we're going to package up a processed food and it's going to sit somewhere for 2 or 3 months maybe before it ends up getting sold, or even longer. We can't have a person open the package, you know, the outside package, and have the inside just be a mess. So there's a lot of long ways to go. But
you know what? I would love to see some financial incentive to get more and improved biodegradable plastics and other kinds of plastic replacements on the market. And I think, and I read a book called The Ecology of Commerce a long time ago, but they said if you set up your economic system and your government right, then the free market will drive the changes for the economy and the ecology. And so if you say, like, if you tax waste at a high level, then the industry will be driven to find better ways to do things because it costs them more to do things poorly. So I think tax on plastics at a high rate, the industry would just find a better way because now they get that financial incentive to do so. Right now, it's plastic so cheap, there's no incentives.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And two things to be said there. Agree totally, and that's exactly where we're at with a lot of these things. And we're understanding that as advocates and environmentalists and so forth, just shouting and carrying on is not nearly as effective as the nuts and bolts ways politics and the economy and, sure. and society.
Well, I mean, we all use our wallet to make our decisions.
So, exactly. It's another way you can vote. And I love the fact that they started out with straws on this because we're all looking at those poor turtles with a straw up their nose. But this is the thing, you know, that we didn't expect is that these scientists are now going to be able to try and save these reefs thanks to this straw effort. So you never know which way it's going to go. So let's just get busy and start trying stuff.
Awesome stuff. I love it. All right.
New world record, Clay. New world record.
Oh, my God. For what?
Oh, my God. Strange-looking fish stuns Oregon woman as she catches the world record monkey face prickleback fish.
I love the name of this fish so much. And looking at the picture, I don't know where they got monkey face on it, but it is an ugly-looking fish.
It is. And
I don't usually say that about fish, but this one is really ugly.
Oh, now its mama loves it so much and loves the fact that it looks like a eel with a monkey head on it.
Yeah.
Because if you see them at rest, and there's tons and tons of images of these because they are so interesting. I think I can see where they get this. But anyway, Rebecca Jones of Tillamook, Oregon, told officials she started fishing and hunting just a few years ago and has largely learned it all by herself by watching videos on the internet. So if you're all out there producing YouTube, well, it's doing some good here, and people are learning what you're laying down. The old record caught in 2008 in Newport, Oregon, weighed just over 3 pounds. She smashed that record, bringing in a 4.8-pounder, rendering it possible for the world record. Of course, she's weighed it, and she's measured it, and she's kept it in the freezer, so when they need to verify it and so forth, they can do that, but I think Rebecca has pretty much got it. When she headed to Barview Jetty near Garibaldi, hoping just to get a few rockfish for dinner, she hooked into this prickleback, and guess what? She still had dinner, Clay, because looks are deceiving, and while bonefish are awful pretty, I wouldn't try and eat one, and while these monkeyfish may not be your favorite thing to look at, they're supposedly outstanding.
Yeah, well, most fish taste like fish, so I think I'm not surprised. good for her. That's great. That's good for her. And what a cool fish, too. I never even heard of that one before. I love learning about a new fish.
Me neither. And because I hadn't heard about it, I assume some other people might want to know more. So I found a little article on monkey face pricklefish and the conservation status. They're really not that well known because they're a very scattered species. A very reclusive species. They don't move around. They average, they stay around their home for they don't get more than 15 feet from where they like to live. And so they live in rocks. They live in kelp beds. They're seldom specifically targeted by anglers. The few studies that have done indicate that the parents are nest guarders. They are attendant parents. But they're hard to catch. When you lived out there, did you ever poke pole with a broomstick?
I've never poke pole. I've seen people do that through frozen rivers and stuff for eels and tommy cods, but I've never done it myself.
Well, I've seen it, of course, on YouTube, and it's a crazy way to fish. Poke poling is when you take a broomstick or a piece of bamboo pole and you put a heavy piece of wire on the end of it, a semi-heavy piece, but somewhat flexible piece of wire, and you put a hook on that wire and you put a chunk of bait And then when the tide's down under these big rock piles and jetties and stuff, there's still water in there. And you and these fish just hang. They don't go out with the tide. They just kind of get in under all these rocks and hang in that water. But they'll still eat. And you can stick it down in there and catch stuff. And it's just the craziest thing you ever saw.
Well, now I want to do it.
I do, too. But because they're kind of reclusive and so forth and relatively unsought, the conservation status is relatively unknown. There seems to be plenty of them north and not so many of them south. They go all the way down to Baja, but they kind of thin out pretty bad once you get past Southern California. So congratulations one last time, Rebecca, on your world record. And thank you for introducing us to yet another incredible fish species.
I love it. All right, let's get out of the news.
Let's get out of the news.
News, news, fish in the news. Everybody loves their fish in the news.
Okay, Clay, I know you did a very short-lived foray into tying jigs and flies. Do you still do it at all?
Once in a while. I'll tell you what I want to start doing is tying a jig and using a jig, or tying a fly, or tying something, or making a lure and using it while on my boat at the same time. Like just looking around the boat, what can I make into a lure? Like last year, I took a tin can, a beer can, and I cut it into the shape of a fish. And I thought, boy, if I had a hook on each end, I could troll with this thing. And so now I've gotten this idea in my head of like, I got to start turning my garbage on my boat into fishing lures.
There we go. Yeah.
We should do that. We should do the garbage lure challenge.
And the garbage lure
turn
challenge.
Turn trash into lures. Yeah.
Big time flutter bait from a beer can. I love it. I love it. Well, you know, we have our own Jeff Danielson. We have Steve Andrews. We've got some fly tying crazy people on this podcast. And they are joined by our new kid correspondent, Rosie. Rosie is really stepping it up. And I asked Jeff about this new fly that she's learning to tie, or has learned to tie, and it's called the Game Changer. And Jeff's like, oh my gosh, what a pain. He said, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, an hour, depending on how big it is. These things can really take some time. But I had some questions with Rosie, so why don't we get on over to that segment where I sit down with the Cliftons and kind of catch up with Rosie and what she's got going on.
All right, let's go.
Hey everybody, it's Crappie Hippie here, your tree-hugging redneck from Eastern Kansas, and in Glasswater Studios right now, right here and now, I have the incredible Rosie from Rosie's Bait and Tackle with her dad, Hugh, and we're going to talk about her fly tying exploits as of late and a few other things that she's got going on. Hello, Rosie, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you, Mr. Crappie Hippie?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm in here. Well, I'm doing 110% better because I'm talking to the Cliftons, who are my favorite people, and so it can only help but get me going and get me in a happy mood. And also, we're going to talk about fishing stuff. So, what could be better, right?
I don't know. What could be better than fishing?
Yeah, that's it. I don't. I have no idea. I don't think there's anything better. Okay, now I don't know where to start because you've been posting on Instagram, and this is at Rosie Space and Basically. This is at Rosie's Bait and Tackle on Instagram. You can check out all these things that Rosie's up to, whether she's out catching fish or she's tying flies or jigs or making rods. This young lady does it all. She is also our new kid correspondent for the Fish Nerds podcast. So we will be checking in with her from time to time throughout the year. And here is one of her first reports because she has been tying a new fly. And this is a relatively new pattern to me, and I think maybe to a lot of people. But it's an articulated fly with incredible action. It also, Jeff Danielson, our fly fishing guy, tells me it's very hard to tie, very labor-intensive, and yet her version is absolute dynamite. You get on Instagram, you watch this thing swim, you're going to want one. And so, Rosie, what is the name of this new articulated fly that you put on Instagram a while back? And I contacted you and I wanted to know more about it. What is it called?
It is a special kind of game changer that We use both dubbing and foam along with the main body called with chenille. We do different colors. We could do just about any color.
Okay. Well, what's selling well, or what are your favorite colors to tie, or what colors do you think are most effective in a game changer?
Well, I'd recommend maybe a blurple.
A blurple.
One of my favorites.
And blurple is what color?
Both black and purple.
Black and purple, that sounds like a very effective combo for steelhead and largemouth black bass both. What does it work on in the salt water?
It's really good with stripers.
With stripers, all right. Well, I'm getting a solid black one from you for fishing for bass, because around me, they like to eat little muskrats, little mice and stuff that go swimming across the top, and then when it gets super hot in the summertime, we go out at night. And we can fish for them at night, and you love to have a black pattern for doing that. So if someone wants one of these game changers, how do they get hold of you, Rosie?
They can send us a message on Instagram.
There you go. Message her through Instagram. Once again, that's at Rosie's Bait and Tackle on Instagram. And how much is a game changer?
$15.
$15 sounds like a bargain to me, because believe you me, Jeff Danielson loves to tie flies like nothing else. He's almost as crazy about it as you. And he says, by golly, those things take him almost an hour just to tie one. So I think that's more than fair. I can't wait to get mine. Okay, now there's another fly that you've been tying, and I saw demonstrated, and I had to get one from you. It's called the gurgler. What is a gurgler?
A gurgler has a tail, which can be different material, but the main part of it that makes it a gurgler, like which does water disturbance, is two pieces of foam.
Okay, can you describe that foam on top for our listeners, because this is just for ears only, so we have to create our pictures with words. Can you kind of describe it? How does it make the gurgling noise? Or do I have to stand there on shore going gurgle, 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 gurgle while I fish it? Or do I have to, does the lure do it for me?
It floats on top of the water, and it makes a gurgling sound as you retrieve it because of the two pieces of foam.
Well, that sounds fantastic. This is another one I'm just know it's going to be great for largemouth black bass. Now, what do you use a gurgler for? And you can't say striped bass unless it's the truth.
You can't use it for striped bass. It can be a replacement for poppers, I think.
Yeah. It's the disturbance is just a little different. It is more of a bubbly blurpy rather than pop, pop, pop. I'm just stoked as heck, and I want to get a bigger one for you from you for bass, and then I want an itty bitty one for fishing for small bass and bluegill. I know bluegill kind of run small in your world, kind of a bait fish probably to you, but to me, I just love to catch them. Have you ever caught a bluegill or a sunfish, like a pumpkin seed or anything?
Yep.
So you know they fight hard.
Yep.
And they fight hard. Do you have a little rod, like a three-weight, two-weight, something like that, to go play around with a little fish?
I have a four-weight.
Four-weight, that's just fine. That's just fine. Catch them on a five-weight, too. I had this idea that you could tie a fly for me for catching gar. Have you ever caught a gar?
No, I've never gone fishing for them.
Do you know what a gar is?
Yes, I do, because, well, we once went to a Cabela's Bass Pro Shops that had a whole bunch of gar, including alligator gar. There's one that was the most pretty I've ever seen.
Well, that's probably the spotted gar.
Pretty much our pet.
Yeah. Well,
I
right.
named her Shelly.
You named her what?
Shelly.
Sally the gar. That's fantastic.
Sorry, Shelly.
Oh, Shelly the gar. All right. Very good. Shelly the gar. I like that. I assume this was in the tank, right? The big tank?
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jeff Danielson and I like to go out and fly fish. Well, he fly fishes for gar. I'm going to give it a try this summer. And I thought you and I could come up with something You think we can do that?
I bet so.
And the crazy thing about gar flies is that you have to use... Do you know what EP fiber is?
Yes.
Okay, so you have to use something like widow's web or EP fiber or something like that, because gar's jaw is just bone. It's all bone. I mean, they're basically just skin covering some bone. There's no meat for a hook to sink into, no web for it to go through. And so you tie a fly that tangles up the gar teeth, and that's how you get them in. But we always tie them with a hook because gar ain't the only fish in the river. And sometimes a big old flathead will come up, or a blue cat or a drum, and just suck that thing up. So would you be willing to work on a gar fly with me?
Of course.
Oh, of course. So you can do custom, and you can, you know, you're up to any challenge. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yep.
Okay, so next question I want to know, because Todd, the fish wrap writer, has been kind of putting me off on this. He's like, I don't know. You know, it's a little too early for the fish to be running up and down the coast, really too early for the hot action. But when is Rosie going to go fishing, and what is she going to go fishing for on her first trip over to the salt water?
Well, first we're going to go freshwater. We're going on Saturday to Barber Pond.
Barber Pond. And what are you going to chase over there?
Well, I'm really hoping to catch a nice gold trout, but I'm also targeting landlocked salmon, brown trout, rainbow trout, and brook trout.
Oh, wow. So it's a cold water pond, and it has the landlocked salmon, or is it connected to the ocean somehow?
It's...
Landlocked means they live in the pond all the time, and there's no connection.
If I can jump in for a second, the sure. state record landlocked salmon was actually caught out of this pond.
Okay. What y'all call a pond is a little different than what we call a pond in Kansas, because we don't have the true limnology. Like, I know the first pond somebody took me on in New Hampshire, it was 165 acres, and I'm like, well, this is a lake. And he's like, no, it's a pond, because it's shallow enough the weeds grow all the way across the bottom, and that's the difference. Whereas in Kansas, it's just ponds are almost all man-made. And they're generally 1 to 5 acres. So a lot smaller water, a lot more contained. So this sounds like a heck of a good, fun time. I wish you well. That sounds like, okay, so what are you going to tie on to chase? What are you going to chase? Are you going to do something that catches everything, or are you going to target?
Well, a little bit of both.
A little bit of both? A little bit of general fishing, a little bit of targeting. Have you ever caught a salmon before?
Yeah.
Yeah? I heard they're hard fighters. Is that right? Hard fighters, they like to jump?
Yeah, but it was a little guy.
Hey, sometimes those little guys can be the funnest. You're talking to a bluegill fisherman over here, okay? I say as long as they give it their best, I'm all over it. So, and believe me, some people just want to check that box on their list. Starting off with a small one sounds just A-okay to me. Okay, now, last thing before I let you get on down the road or get back to the bench or get back to your bench. Well, you've got two benches. You got your fly tying bench over here. You got your rod building bench over there. But before I let you get back to doing some stuff, or maybe just running around being a little girl on your spider bike or whatever the heck you like to do, you're not going to say what the heck's a spider bike. Your daddy can explain it to you. I want to know, you've got a special report coming up. You are our kid correspondent, one of our kid correspondents, our new kid correspondent. And your mama and me came up with this idea to do a story and have you interview the author of a book. And this will be our first kid's book for Fish Nerds, done by a kid. So go ahead, fill the listeners in. What we got coming up?
Mr. Andrew.
We're not sure if it's Andrew Weiner, Andrew Weiner. I can fill in a little bit of background about him.
Sure.
He is the author of an award-winning children's book, Down by the River. And he's president of Reeling in Serenity. This is a really good organization that helps people dealing with addiction and connects them to fly fishing and community. So definitely a very powerful message, definitely a great place to start, and some really neat people. So I think she's really looking forward to that conversation.
Well, yep, I'm really excited.
You're really excited? Well, I'm really excited too. I really am. I'm, can you tell? My head's kind of bobbing around when you see that happening. And then you know I'm really excited. And of course, you listen to the podcast over and over again all the time, right? You don't have any time for Taylor Swift or any of that because you're always listening to Fish Nerds, right, Rosie?
Yep.
All right. That's a very politic answer, and I love it. Well, listen, we just did a story on Tackling Minds, a program in England. This will be a great follow-up. I was just hoping to start getting some follow-up about programs here in the United States that do kind of the same thing. So I guess what we're going to do, we're going to have you talk about the book, and then I think I will be calling Mr. Wiener up and asking him about his program and what he's got going on. So what the heck? Now you're giving me assignments. What the heck just happened here?
I have no idea.
That's me. I kind of just go with the flow. I have no idea. All right. Well, Rosie, is there anything else you want to tell the listeners? Got some stuff coming up. Got some exciting news of any kind?
Mm-hmm. Well, Rosie has a special assignment right now. She is actually doing a kayak fishing rod build 100% by herself. Dad is hands off, not allowed to do any of it at all. And it already looks professional and looks amazing. So she can't wait to share that with everybody when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we will be looking for that in the days or weeks to come. And we will be looking to get together on this Garfly thing. And I will be looking to get my Game Changers for summer, my Gurgler for summer. What a fantastic time. Well, Rosie, if that's that, we're going to let you get back to having some fun or, I don't know, peeling potatoes, whatever you got on your agenda for tonight. it's always great to talk to you. Always great to talk to your dad. And I thank you for coming on this evening.
Thank you. Thank you for
having
us on the podcast.
Well, you're a staffer now. I'm putting you to work, girl. I won't try to be too mean about it, but you're welcome on the pod whenever you want because you're not just on the pod. You're in the band. All right?
Okay.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, guys.
Okay.
Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
Well, are you impressed or what?
I'm impressed with Rosie. Anyway, I've been following her on Instagram. And the kid's got it. Kid's got it.
She really does.
Yeah.
Can you believe that she is going to be the first kid correspondent to bring us our first kid book author? I mean, what a way that came together.
That's amazing.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So there's your little teaser. And get some of those. I'm getting me my Game Changers, and I'm getting me a couple of Gurglers, and it's going to be a...
The names are the best, too. Gurgler.
They're the fly names, all the names. Yeah, the Gurgler. I can't believe it, but it's going to be some danger for them bass around me here come summer. But speaking of danger, let's get back with Tim Tacklebox Beat and talk about some stuff that Creek Life Lure Company, which is based in the Appalachian Mountains of Tennessee, they've got a lot of cool stuff, and Tim's here with Calvin to tell you all about it.
I'm Tim Tacklebox Beat here today with Calvin, the owner of Creek Life Lure Company. Creek Life Lure Company has a lot of incredible products for anglers who love fishing tiny creeks. His lures are amazing, but today we're going to talk about the micro fishing rods that he sells, that he designs and imports from Indonesia. But first, Calvin, how did you even start Creek Life Lure Company? Where did you get your origin?
So the origin is back from when I was a kid. We used to play in the creeks, and that's where my soul resides. So I've kind of brought that into what is my dream of having a company based around that type of fishing. I live streamed my fishing for a while, and that kind of built up to this. And people were like, you know, yeah, you start your own company. You got a real passion for this. So stopped streaming in 2022 and started saving up for, starting out business. Got a couple of molds and it's been crazy ever since.
So, yeah, you have some great, amazing micro finesse lures. But tell me about the micro fishing rods. These are 4-foot fiber optic rods. And I want to talk about that because I've never seen a fiber optic rod. Some of them have horn handles. Some come with these hand carved wooden handles. I've seen otters and owls and fish. Some of them have real seats, but some of them use hand spools, which is something that was new to me as well. So describe the rods a little bit and how they're used.
Okay, so the rods themselves are traditional Indonesian designs, so they're not actually meant to fish with a reel. There's a little hand spool that they, and you put your line around the hand spool there. And when you're holding the rod, you want to hold the spool in your pinky, usually. And you just use, you wait till you get a bite. Then once you set the hook, you'll take it off your pinky and reel. As far as casting goes, you can, there's two different ways you can do it. You can hold it on your opposite pinky or the pinky you're holding the rod in and just cast it and let it kind of spool out. I kind of like to do it like a fly rod. I'll take off several feet of line off the spool and then cast.
One of the things I was surprised about, I always think of microfishing, you know, you're not casting very far, but you can, with this hand spool, you can really cast quite a distance with these.
Yeah, with minimal weight, 1/64, 1/32 ounce, you can cast, you know, 20 feet or so. You can get all the way across a pretty good sized creek.
Describe a little bit about the variety of fish that are caught on these rods.
So most people, they'll target panfish. I've seen a few people catching bass on them. They're not really designed for that. And a couple people catching trout. I myself have caught largemouth on them up to 4 pounds, but they won't break. You can do whatever you want to with them and not going to have much of an issue.
Yeah, so you can almost tie these rods in a knot. So it's not, this isn't traditional fiberglass or graphite. What are these rod blanks made out of? What is a fiber optic rod?
I guess technically it's not fiber optic. It's kind of a bad wording, I guess, on my part. That's what he kind of explained it to me as, but there's a little bit of a language barrier there. It's optic cable. It's what's in telephone lines and stuff like that, telecom lines. They basically collect the scraps from telecom cables and make the rods out of it.
And when you say they make them, this is your partner in Indonesia where these type of things are popular, correct?
Correct, yes. I've known him for 5 years before I started the business, and we became really good friends through fishing, micro fishing. And then he asked to join the business, I think in June of last year.
And while the micro fishing, is, as you said, is just kind of catching on here, it's very popular in Indonesia. What? So this was something that he was very familiar with already?
Yeah. So this is just about the only way they fish over there. It's their, like our majority is bass fishing. Their majority is a micro fishing. And I can't remember the name of the fish. It's, I think they call it a wader is the name of the fish, if I'm not mistaken. Their micro fishing tournaments are as big as our bass fishing tournaments here. They're huge. They have their little outfits and sponsors and everything, just like we do.
That's got to be a whole different thing, because in the United States, you see the bass tournaments and all the big boats go out. I can't imagine a tournament where they're all going down to either the same creek or a whole bunch of little creeks. That sounds crazy.
Yeah, it's fascinating, really, just to see everyone down there so excited to catch such a small fish.
What's been the experience in the United States when people first see these rods? I know whenever you post them online, they sell immediately. Is the whole microfishing culture really kind of picking up in the United States?
It is. Well, there's one big organization, North American Native Fish Association, and they really focus on the forgotten species, basically fish that people never see or never think about. And they're all native fish. They're not invasive. They're native fish. You know, I'm lucky to live here in Appalachia, where Tennessee and North Carolina hold the biggest biodiversity of fish species. North Carolina's first and Tennessee's second, and I think Georgia's third. And people are really starting to discover this, and they love the mystery of dropping a little tiny size 30 hook into a mountain stream and pulling out 10 different types of darter species. Yeah, that's really the allure to it, I think.
So it's it's almost more like a biology trip than a fishing trip.
It is, yeah. So they call that life listing. You try to catch as many species of fish as you can. That's another draw to it.
So in the future, do you plan on having actual real seats, not just the spool, but real seats on your rods as well?
Yeah, so the last stock batch that he sent me, he actually sent me ultralight spinning versions of these rods, but they're not the optic cable. They're carbon fiber, which is a world of difference, but just as good, if not better quality. As far as the material goes, you know, carbon fiber, those are actually made for spinning reels. So we're going to start carrying those. And then he's actually making fly fishing rods. And those are going to be the optic cable. So I'm really interested to see how an optic cable fly fishing rod is going to be. That's going to be like a, I don't know, -5 weight fishing rod. I don't know.
How long are the spinning rods? Are they 4 feet as well?
They are. Yep. These have a traditional spinning rod handle, but they're hand carved, they're handmade still. And then the carbon fiber rod. Now these rods, these carbon fiber rods and the fiber or the optic cable rods are not tapered when he initially gets them. He hand tapers these rods, and he sent me videos of him doing it, and he puts it in a drill, and he takes a piece of sandpaper and he tapers it out by hand until he gets it to the tapered measurements that he wants, you know. It takes a really long time. So I've had several customers message me telling me that it's a completely different experience from anything that they've ever done. It's a whole new world. Had a customer that wanted a custom rod built. We can do that, but it's going to take a long time because we can't just ship one rod over here. It's outrageous shipping to get them over here. So we have to ship, we get, you know, 20 at a time. So if we do a custom build, he's going to have to make it and send it with my stock order. The custom rod that the customer wanted was a half wolf, half dragon. He was originally from Poland and lives in the United States now. And it was something to do with his culture over there, the wolf dragon was. And man, he was ecstatic. He even sent us a little extra for the rod that he didn't have to. And I gave that to my friend. I really want to help him more than me, you know. When I first met him, I sent him $100 for the rod. He was only going to charge me like $65 or something like that. He said, "Oh, so sir, you sent too much money. I got to send it back to you." I was like, "No, man, I just sent you a little extra." I was like, "You spent like an hour on here texting me back and forth, helping me out, showing me how to use these rods." And he's like, "Oh, you don't understand, sir. This is a blessing." And I didn't realize that over there, how much the money difference is. He makes like $280 at his factory job a month. He was very, very appreciative for that little extra bit of money I sent him. The fact that I'm able to help him out with these rods is a real blessing to me as well. And he actually started his own little fishing shop over there now because from the profit that he's got from partnering with me. So
that's incredible. I love the whole fact that you have this cultural exchange going on. They fish this way in Indonesia and they're bringing that over, and you're helping him out economically. It's just a great relationship.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping to make it over there one day. don't know when that ever happened, but I'd love to go over there and fish with him. He's got a son, he uses the rods too, and he can use them 10 times better than I can. I can fish.
All right, so check out the Creek Life Lure Company website at creeklifelureco.com, and also check out their YouTube channel. You need to see these rods in action. And thanks, Calvin, for spending some time with us, and keep up the great work.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Can you believe that there's a country where catching a 2-inch fish is as big as bass tournaments here?
I can. You know, I do a lot of chatting with my friends over in Finland, and they do a lot of species fishing, and to them it's that kind of fishing is where it's at. So,
well, and I love the recycled part where they're taking this leftover optic cable mm-hmm. and making it into fishing rods. I mean, that is total Fisher stuff.
I love anything recycling is good, especially upcycling, like that true yeah. recycling, something not without it having to go to process. You just reuse it in a better way or new way. So
yeah, and it's just so cool. You just talked about looking around in your boat. Hey, I can make a fishing lure out of that beer can. Yeah, mm-hmm. Here this guy's like, look at all these cable scraps. I'm going to do something with this stuff.
I love
it. By golly, he's off and running now. So it's pretty awesome. Well, Clay, are you ready to intro?
Sure.
latest accomplishment?
Yeah, I mean, and I didn't ask Doc Martin permission to do this. I'm just doing it. She shares some fun stuff on Facebook every so often. She's been with the podcast since almost the very, very beginning. And she's been a lot of fun, and she's always trying to write songs and play music, plays guitar. So she's nerdy, and she's musically inclined, artistic. She's got all the things. She got it all. So anyway, Doc Martin wrote a little song about Dace. Here's a little song about Dace. Hard to say that. Thanks, Doc. And coming up with Doc Martin. Doc Martin just went to Miami and got a chance to go shark tagging and do some science with Dr. Schiffman. And she messaged us, and she was very proud of the work she's doing out there. These great pictures from Miami. You saw them, John. And so in an upcoming piece, we don't know when yet, we'll be getting some great interviews from Doc Martin's trip to Miami and learn more about sharks. So that's exciting.
That is super exciting, and even that is super exciting, and on an equal footing with that, Doc has agreed to reintroduce Fish of the Day. So you listeners have been asking about where's Fish of the Day, what happened to Fish of the Day. We love that segment. Well, Doc and Josh are going to bring it back, but we're not going to just shove the whole workload on
them. Wait, Fish Guy Josh is coming back?
Fish Guy Josh said, yeah, if we'd help him produce. I mean, he's busy as his job, and he's a daddy
now. We can produce,
He's going to try and help us produce, and he's going to even try to bring back Fish Guy Follow, so we'll hopefully see.
I like Fish Guy Josh. He's got a great YouTube channel.
He does have a great YouTube channel.
We'll put a link in the show notes. You can check out that. Also, he shares it on our Fish Nerds Facebook group all the time, so fishing with his kid there. So it's always a delight to watch. So that's exciting.
Yeah, they're fun little videos and super fun to watch. So we're going to have some Fish of the Day, but you're not going to just see Josh and Doc. All the other correspondents are going to take a dip into the Fish of the Day pool. And it's going to be a little different, but we are bringing it back.
Excellent, excellent. Love to bring it back. You know, John, I also want to bring back one more thing. I want to bring back Stump the Fish Nerds.
Yes.
Okay. We have a Fish Nerds hotline number, 607-378-FISH. And we used to call it Stump the Fish Nerds, the Fish Nerds hotline. And you can call us in with any fish question anytime, and we'll address that on the show and play your message as well. So 607-378-FISH. We're going to bring it back, Fish Nerds Hotline. So there it is.
Please do that. Please do that. And if you actually stump us, I'll send you something. and I may just send you something anyway.
Perfect.
All right. Well, listen, these folks have listened to us go on when they should have been out fishing.
Yeah, we want a big, big fat thank you to Wally Pleasant, Diana's Bath Salt. The Wally Pleasant does our theme song. Diana's Bath Salt does our news theme. Tim Beat, Rosie, Hugh Clifton, and of course, we need
Rosie
to thank-
and her.
Yeah, I'm so confused. Who am I talking about?
Rosie and her daddy, Hugh Clifton, okay? Oh,
I don't read so good. Why don't you do this, John? I'm going to just sit here.
Okay, and then I want to thank Zoe Gross for stomping out a big hole in the lake so that Clay could create the fishing during the eclipse story. And thank you to my girls, too, for giving me a little bit of time here to work on the show while I'm supposed to be paying attention to them. And as always, we want to thank you, listeners, for bringing your ears right on in here and letting us fill them up with fish stuff. Hit that like, smash that follow, and leave us a wonderful review if you would, please. But be sure and tell your friends to come on in, because you know, as we know, it's an awful lot of fun, and we would love to have more people to talk to and have fun with. All righty.
Well, until next time. Until next, I'm doing this, John.
Okay.
Until next time, John, follow the code of the fish nerds.
Spawn early and often.
Never trust a free lunch with strings attached.
And swim against the current every chance you get.
We did it, John. We made a podcast. Whew.
Uneclipsed by anyone.
Whether you're fly fishing in a stream, getting those ankles wet, or deep in the ocean casting nets, fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.
Just for the halibut.
Fry it in a basket or broiled in a pan. Eat it raw like you're in Siam. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. Fish nerds. It's a podcast.